Welcome to Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. It's been a long week. We just want to go a little bit more in terms of trying to understand the business landscape of Southeast Asia as well as Malaysia. Very recently, Standard Chartered has issued a survey called the Borderless Business, at which it ranks businesses favorable towards the country. And of course, Malaysia came up quite high because Malaysia, according to the Standard Chartered survey, ranks as second most favorable country for foreign investments in Southeast Asia. So here to unpack all of this is the CEO as well as the Managing Director of Standard Chartered Malaysia, Abra Anwar. Abra, thanks for coming over. I will continue to say this to all our guests, the first few guests coming in. Welcome to our new home. I just want to understand a little bit better about the survey per se and the methodology behind it. Let's talk through the survey.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me. Good to see you. Once again, I think after quite a while.
I think before the MCO, actually,
So, world has changed since then. So, nevertheless, as you know, Standard Chartered, we have been a bank for 150 years plus. So, global bank. So, always we interact with executives, companies across the world in our footprint markets. So, we launched this survey, the Borderless Business, for almost 1,000 CFO and treasury heads of companies ranging from $500 million turnover plus in US, UK, Germany and France to get a feel of how they're looking at the scenario of investing outside and how are they managing through this period. So that was the whole sort of focus on getting some insights from their thoughts and how they are looking forward to navigating in future. So, and when we ask them, like, where do you see your growth coming from in the near future, 6 to 12 months and forward? So, the European companies, 84% of them said that they see that it's homegrown growth, basically consolidating their focus on their home market. Mm. And 74% of the American companies thought that, you know, they will focus on the home market. However, 85% of them thought that if they are expanding outside, it will be Asia Pacific that they will go to. So that was quite an interesting perspective that we got. And within Southeast Asia, Malaysia ranked second preferred destination.
Of course, we rank behind Singapore, our, I guess, closest neighbor and strongest bilateral tie with the country, but that has always been the case for most issues. My my interest is actually revolving around the issue of, has it changed? Has investor appetite to invest in Southeast Asia, in Asia Pacific, changed over the past year, particularly when we had a very tough 2020? Does that come out in this survey?
No, of course, it has changed from the perspective of when you are going through a crisis. Mm. Say, look, pandemic has been a crisis across the world. It's not only specific to any country. So then you first and foremost try to consolidate your position. And mostly people look at their home country first. And as you know, with this new way of working, things, the perspective have changed for many of the companies, how they look at working, how they look at transacting, how they look at doing trade. So even though that has changed a bit, but the core remains same. The people look at how do they harness the best potential for their capital. Mm. How do they access the best supply chain? How do they get the best raw materials for them? Which are the markets that are growing? Where do they invest to take the advantage of the growth, forward-looking growth opportunities? So Asia remains a growth market, growth region, and within that, of course, Asia Pacific and Southeast Asia really stands out. So from that perspective, I would say that it's quite consistent. It has not really changed majorly, but the outlook has changed. What kind of opportunities that investors are looking at, that probably has changed. You've seen that more investments are going into technology, technology-related areas, and so on and so forth. Supply chain disruption, how do the companies ensure they manage the supply chain, the logistics and so on and so forth.
Prior to doing this interview, I was reading similar reports touching about foreign direct investments and foreign investments and the appetite of these investors, particularly moving into 2021. The countries tend to be about the same, roughly. And in your survey, at least, Japan, China ranks really high. In fact, so high to a point where Japan, China, and Australia are all above 33%, 34%. The second place is India, which is 26%, further from the first three. And when you think about Japan, China, and Australia, you don't think so much about natural resources per se, maybe labor for China, but otherwise it's all about a developed market kind of outlook, a market that is using technology intensely. Those are the kind of ideas that not people normally associate. What would you think about China, Japan, and Australia if you group them together? Do you feel that whole idea of investors trying to find making their capital work would make it better if they invest in a highly tech environment rather than in a lower end of a supply chain, a raw markets kind of country? Do you feel that is the case in terms of why Japan, China, and Australia came up tops?
See, if you look at when the investors are looking at investing abroad, the few things they like to consider. First is definitely the regulatory framework, whether how people are confident and comfortable with the regulatory framework and the overall governance of that market.
Mm.
That's one. And then also finding the right partners. That's also came out. I mean, if I mention what are the key areas of focus that investors look at when they are venturing outside,
mm.
then right finding the right kind of partners,
mm.
and also maybe managing the trapped cash.
Mm.
If you're investing, you want to ensure that you're able to bring in your dividend, repatriate your capital.
Mm.
So the more stable the countries or more developed the countries are, they will have a natural advantage of getting the capital flow going there.
Mm.
Of course, then you talk about the emerging markets where the growth prospect is there, but on these few counts, there are still areas that where investors would like to get more comfort. So you will see that in that ranking, it really comes out.
So, yeah. Melissa, we can work on a lot more, I guess, items that you mentioned just now. Social and governance issue, for instance. There's a lot of efforts on corporates trying to do more, but we're not there yet. Issues on environmental, we don't have a national environmental policy, for instance. We don't have a national waste management strategy, so to speak. But in other areas, we're particularly okay when it comes to digitization, digital transformation, when it comes to adoption for both public and private sector. Of course, there's a recent issue of cabotage reversal policy. That is, of course, ongoing, but still means that we are better than most in terms of all these neighbors of ours when it comes to this kind of digital arguments, right? Do you feel that that could be a competitive edge onto why Malaysia is ranked a bit higher than most of our neighbors, just behind Singapore, basically?
Yeah. No, of course, Malaysia, as Standard Chartered Bank, we have been here 146 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we have been a very long-term investor
mm.
in this market. And we're the first bank in the country. Plus, we have been investing continuously in the market.
Mm. Mm.
And Malaysia ranks among the top 10 growth markets for the bank mm. out of our 60-plus markets that we operate.
Mm, mm,
mm. Malaysia, if you look at fundamentally, is a very, very attractive country in terms of resources, in terms of, say, oil and gas and water, mm. agriculture, mm. forestry, land mass, the people, 33 million people, education background, as well as inclusive nation, with, of course, English language and legal system. So this works as a good fundamental foundation for an enabling environment. Plus, if you look back, Malaysia undertook the digital economy strategy much earlier than many countries.
Mm.
And if you go back 20, 30 years, the export basket and the GDP profile of the country was way different from what you see today.
No, definitely, yeah.
So it has been...
All in one generation, by the way.
Yeah, it has been evolving. It has been evolving from white goods. I remember seeing air conditioners and the fridges were all made in Malaysia 20, 30 years back.
Mm.
But now you see semiconductors.
Mm.
You see high-tech equipment, medical equipment.
Mm.
If you go to Penang, the technology manufacturing that's happening, it's like a supply chain of the global brands sitting here.
Mm-mm.
So to do that, you need that ecosystem. You needed that ecosystem to progressively build. So that provides a good, I would say, attraction for investors, because you know that the ecosystem is there. You can go there and scale up.
Mm.
Plus the local resources, also bringing in international resources. As I was mentioning to you, we have one of our larger global business services here.
Technology. Our neighbor, actually, here.
Yeah, it's a neighbor.
Our studio.
In Bukit Jalil, Wisma Standard Chartered.
Mm.
It's a 24/7 state-of-the-art operation. With, cyber defense facilities, cyber security, as well as command center. We call it a global control and command center. It's very, very high tech.
Mm.
We could have the confidence to set it up here because the other enabling infrastructure has been here. So now, forward looking, it needs to keep on improving for Malaysia to realize its digital economy dream.
Mm.
The Malaysia Digital Economy Blueprint has come out.
Mm.
It's very, very commendable that the plan is there, but it will be all about execution.
And that's the key here, because my guest yesterday and my guest 2 days ago, oh my God, three days in a row talking about the Digital Economy Blueprint, they're all, including you now, they're all worried about the execution bit, because that is the part. I mean, you have the highway, you have the runway, let's just put the cars and the ships and make it fly, right? That's the key here when it comes to trying to be competitive, because it seems like Singapore, for instance, has been extremely well in executing their policies, Hong Kong as well, for the longest of time. But the issue here is, of course, how do we keep being competitive when our neighbors like Indonesia and Vietnam, which is surprisingly ranked lower than I thought, would be more, attractive for foreign investors. But they're coming in fast. What do you think would be some of the key features that Malaysia should think about in order for us to keep our competitive advantage here?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a very good question. What's next? How do you remain out there? If you look at the investment that Singapore is getting, it's actually at a bit higher end.
Mm.
Like data center and all those areas.
Mm.
Can Malaysia do it? Of course.
Mm.
Data center is going to be a big opportunity. Some of it, maybe Indonesia is also trying to get.
Mm.
What do you need for data center? If I just pick up one example, you need consistent and very efficient power supply for data centers, for Google or for other technology entities.
Mm.
So that's one piece. Then if you look at the manufacturing base now, just recently a big British multinational came and set up a medical equipment manufacturing, high-tech medical equipment manufacturing plant there. So then they need to build the backward integration, because you see, at the end of the day, you will need to have an ecosystem to support those front-ended manufacturing. So Malaysia has a clear advantage in manufacturing, which may not be maybe in other countries in ASEAN. $250 billion export from here. And it's an open economy.
Mm.
So we must give a lot of credit to the Malaysian entrepreneurs who are actually exporting in the world, fighting out with everybody and anybody in the world. That's why from the bank we launched Export Excellence Award in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Why? It's like really honoring the heroes of the nation who really thrives in the global market.
Mm.
It's like thriving in adversity, especially in 2020. Just imagine how adverse the situation was.
Mm.
But still, the trade has done well. So from our perspective, we believe that skill set would be key. Because you just can't set up a shop here. You need people who you will be able to employ. So if you look at the future skill set that will be required, it would be more in technology. Is Malaysia getting ready to have those capable people so that technology companies or anything to do with manufacturing at the higher end wants to set up here, they see that, yes, I've got substantial resources here. The India advantage in the technology was they have a lot of pool of resources, engineers and software engineers and stuff. But we have set up our global business services here. We have got fantastically talented Malaysians working here, 90% Malaysians working here. And 10% we get the specialists coming in, they intermingle and they come. So we need to provide that platform for such companies to thrive in Malaysia. So that we can take that advantage.
My worry is that even if they do get, there's a lot of brain drain issue that we talked about over the past few years actually. But yeah, we'll do what we can. We'll go for a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Abra Anwar of Standard Chartered. Welcome back. I have with me Abra Anwar, the Managing Director as well as the CEO of Standard Chartered Malaysia. Before we wrap up our conversation, I just want to understand a little bit better about how Standard Chartered is going to go about doing business for 2021. You know, I mean, you guys are pretty famous around the world and of course, doing a lot for the community as well. I'm a marathon runner. I participate quite heavily in the Standard Chartered Kuala Lumpur Marathon. It has been postponed so many times because of so many reasons, from haze to pandemics. And this year you guys did something differently, which is running virtually. Is this how things are going to be moving forward when it comes to doing business? It's just going to be totally different, not the way we've seen before?
Well, we had a very good participation in the virtual marathon, but we, of course, looking forward to the real one. I hope it will be happening soon. I think the world is passing through a phase. It's like the black swan event. So we are hopeful with this vaccine coming in and with the herd immunity developing across the world, probably very soon things will go back to normalcy. But now for us, having lived almost a year now, more than a year through this pandemic, we have sort of adjusted to the new normal, hybrid operation with some people coming to office, some people working from home. Similarly, as we look at our customer base, they've all adjusted. They're asking new questions. Do I need that much space? Do I need that much of, the fixed cost? How do I remain agile? So we believe that it will come back to normalcy, but the learning from the pandemic would remain. And then it will be part and parcel of how we look at things in future. The borders are still closed. It opens and it closes. The vaccination success across the world would be very critical. I was in New York just a few months back, and they have been vaccinating millions of people a day.
That's right. They even hit 4 million actually very recently.
Yeah, correctly. Correct. So once they are able to achieve a reasonable confidence, they will bounce back very quickly. So when US bounces back, then you will see that other countries also are very well connected. It's happening in Europe as well. So we believe by 2022, hopefully, things will become much more normal than what it is today.
Just a little bit on the banking side, low interest rate seems to be the flavor of the, I guess, decade for the time to come. We are expecting the interest rate to continue to remain low. There's a lot of financial prudency as well. A lot of banks are, like yourselves, are having a tough time managing defaulted accounts. And of course, you know, because of the continued moratorium and you know, a lot of assistance that needs to be given to the people, it becomes a point where people need to be start to rethink how they manage their finances. What would be some of the ideas that you have gone through for the past 1 year, and maybe you want to share some insights into what you have learned through the pandemic?
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting question because nobody could realize that this type of situation can happen.
Mm.
So we have seen commodity price collapsing. We have seen the hedge positions, people making huge losses, didn't ever expect. And also we have seen people who were like on a high leverage, that how difficult it was for them to manage. Because, I mean, if the top line has gone down, unless you can cut your costs,
you're just cutting grade. Yeah.
So the people who have survived, or I would say that 1 year of testing period, the companies that had, or individuals who had some surplus with them, who had lesser leverage, and who were sort of, not spending unnecessarily, prudence. Mm. So those things really are the big learnings that we see. When we look at a new credit now, we'll be looking at it in a much more different way.
Yeah. That was my follow-up question. Yeah. Risk management is a new business altogether now. Yeah. You will look at it in a very different light. It's interesting that you mentioned prudence of spending, not necessarily the existing cost per se, so where you want to spend the money. Do you feel that that has been lacking in terms of, I'm not talking about prudence, I'm talking about risk management, looking at it in totality. Do you feel that that has to be enhanced moving forward?
You see, in Malaysia, I think what has happened, the banking sector has done well. I would say that I'll give a lot of credit to the banks as well as our regulator, BNM. Because we went into the pandemic with very strong liquidity and capital position. Most of the banks, all the banks, I would say, in Malaysia. Because it has, since Asian crisis, the industry has gone through major restructuring and consolidation.
Yeah.
So going into pandemic, banking sector was very strong. So with all the moratorium and the restructuring and rescheduling that we have been giving, with almost 98-99% approval rate across the banks for rescheduling requests, or moratorium was blanket to the SMEs and the to the individuals.
Retail,
So going forward, of course, our thoughts would be to ensure that we take into account our learnings into our risk management. As a bank also, we are actually looking at new risks, not only that your credit risk, but also the cyber risk, but the technology risk. It's because people working from home, you're exposed to data security, information security risk, operational resilience risk, whether you can sustain the operation by remotely working. Plus, there are many new things we are doing, and people are adopting technology more than before. So new horizon risk has emerged. So credit risk, we always knew it's coming, or if something...
It's time tested.
Time tested, and also if disaster happens, you know what is the... You can dimension it.
Yeah.
But this type of risk, sort of undimensionable at times.
Yet, perhaps with time.
Yeah, because you see, if a bank loses its data, then how do you dimension that risk? Because all your money is just about data. So now I think people will be much more, I would say, savvy in terms of risk understanding. Let's put it this way, risk understanding and then putting in mitigations in place.
I think that's the most important thing. Very interesting. Like I said, you know, the last time we met, there was no pandemic. You know, I hope the next time we meet, we won't have to endure another round of pandemic. But that was a good conversation. That was Abra Anwar, the Managing Director as well as the CEO of Standard Chartered Malaysia. There's plenty of information that can be found in terms of the survey that they've done that we've spoken of in this particular episode. And if you want to learn more, just head on to their website to get more information on that. Also, if you've missed any part of this interview, just head on to astrawani.com. Look for Notepad. There are plenty of interviews like this that can be found there. Until then, enjoy the weekend. Thanks very much for watching and goodbye.